It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. With more than 40% of the vote in, Spain's Catalonia region defied the central government Sunday, voting overwhelmingly for independence. Several thousand gathered in Barcelona's central Plaça de Catalunya Sunday night to celebrate the referendum.
Els ciutadans de Catalunya ens hem guanyat el dret a tenir un estat independent.
President Carles Puigdemont said the people won the right to become an independent state. He's expected to make a declaration within 48 hours. But Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy has a different view.
Ha fracasado un proceso que solo ha servido.
He said the referendum failed, adding that it has only served to sow division. He said coexistence must be recovered as soon as possible. Police used batons and rubber bullets to disrupt some of the voting. Hundreds reportedly were injured. Spanish analyst Carlos Castillo of the Atlantic Council said the turnout was about the same as a similar referendum in 2014.
The people that are getting out and voting are the ones that are pro-independence. We knew that. That's not news. The unfortunate thing is that we had to get to a point in which the police had to intervene, and neither the Spanish government nor the Catalan government were able to reach a negotiated solution.
The ballot has no legal standing. It was blocked by Spain's constitutional court. At least 7 people were killed, several wounded Sunday in Cameroon's English-speaking regions after security forces fired on protesters demanding independence from the majority Francophone country. The protests were held on the 56th anniversary of the incorporation of the English-speaking region into Cameroon. The dispute, dating to World War I, involves long-standing complaints by English speakers of discrimination, including the distribution of the country's oil wealth. This is VOA News. President Donald Trump tweeted Sunday that his Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is wasting his time trying to negotiate with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Tillerson in China said the U.S. was communicating directly with Pyongyang on its nuclear and missile programs. Later, Mr. Trump tweeted that his predecessors failed in trying to rein in the North's nuclear ambitions. The Atlantic Council's Robert Manning said that's true up to a point.
Yes, they failed. It's a difficult problem. That doesn't mean he's going to do any better, number one. Number two, I can't recall any time in modern history, you know, even when Ronald Reagan was talking about evil empires, taunting and insulting an adversarial leader. That's hardly a recommendation for diplomacy.
A State Department spokesperson Sunday said diplomatic channels with the North have been open for months, but they won't be open forever. 2 women, one from Vietnam, the other from Indonesia, Monday pleaded not guilty as their trial. The murder of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's half-brother got underway in Kuala Lumpur. They were arrested days after the killing of Kim Jong-nam February 13th at the city's airport. They're accused of taking part in rubbing a toxic nerve agent in his face. They claim they were persuaded it was a prank for a TV reality show. They face the death penalty if convicted. U.S. and Bangladeshi officials are to meet in Washington this week for talks expected to include the plight of hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslims who fled a security crackdown in western Myanmar. The U.S. is set to contribute more than $30 million in humanitarian aid, including food, medical supplies, water, emergency shelter, and other support. David Beasley, head of the World Food Program, Sunday called for an even greater stepped-up support of the refugees.
You're talking about 400,000 or 500,000 people that are needing to be fed every single day. Bangladesh alone can't handle this. The international community must rally. They must come together around the people and the leadership of Bangladesh, the NGOs, the private sector, and the United Nations and others that are here on the ground in a very difficult situation.
He said the WFP will need $75 million in the next 6 months just on food alone. 2 women were stabbed to death Sunday, their assailant shot dead in the southern French port city of Marseille. The Islamic State claimed responsibility. In Canada, police charged a Somali refugee with 5 counts of attempted murder Sunday after he allegedly stabbed a police officer and ran down pedestrians with a car in Edmonton, Alberta. Disgraced former professional football player O.J. Simpson was set free early Sunday from a Nevada prison after 9 years for armed robbery. In 1995, the 70-year-old Simpson was acquitted in an internationally watched trial in Los Angeles in the murder of his former wife and her male friend. Simpson now subject to 5 years of supervised parole. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, October 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon's opposition leader accuses security forces of indiscriminate shooting and killings.
The Anglophones are celebrating the restoration of their independent day, but the US government panicked and flooded both the north and southwest with well-armed troops. Some of them, when they saw the crowd, they panicked and started shooting at them.
Nijon Frundi is the leader of Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front Party. Angola's new government announces a cabinet. Burundi says it will not cooperate with the UN Commission investigating alleged human rights violations. And the trial of a Liberian warlord opens today in the U.S. city of Philadelphia.
The trials of individuals that are associated with the atrocities in our country for the last 14 years of the Civil War is something that the Union applauds. We endorse that.
Wilmer Coney is the president of the Union of Liberian Associations in the Americas. And Kenya trains some Boda motorcycle drivers to provide CPR. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The leader of Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front Party is accusing government security forces of indiscriminately shooting at and killing unarmed protesters in the country's English-speaking regions. Nijon Frundi says security forces panicked and began shooting at protesters calling for the independence of the English-speaking regions. He said a stray bullet shot in his compound killed a little girl. The Reuters news agency reports that soldiers shot dead at least 8 people and wounded others. The English-speaking region has been experiencing protests since last year against the domination of French in the region's schools and courts. Frundi says the agitation, mostly by the region's youth, is the making of President Paul Biya, who, Frundi said, has refused to dialogue with the opposition. Now, Frundi says he has told the youth to fight for their rights.
Today, the Anglophones are celebrating the restoration of their independent day. But the Biya's government panicked and flooded both the north and southwest with well-armed troops. Some of them, when they saw the crowd, they panicked and started shooting at them. So it's unfortunate that even a tear gas canister, they fired into my compound. And they were shooting the guns at random. I'm told a little girl sitting in the house, a stray bullet knocked her dead. I started warning Mr. Biya about this thing a long time ago. I told him that it will soon get out of her hands. And if it gets out of her hands, he will not be able to control, because the youths that are demonstrating here are children between 10 and 35. So that's where we are.
Mr. Frundi, President Paul Biya has said on his Facebook page that there is nothing wrong with people expressing their concerns. But it is wrong when they want to do so through street violence and defying of authority, indicating that these protesters are using violence.
Sir, the protesters were not violent. The violence is perpetrated by the forces of Mr. Biya, who break into people's houses, beat children anyhow, and when they're doing some of these things, the children are forced maybe to throw stones. But on the occasion of today, I was not told of any situation where they threw a stone at a member of the armed forces. But these members of the armed forces are shooting them. Mr. Biya said that people should not be violent. He is the one who is violent with his troops, killing innocent protesters. When we launched a party, they came out and killed people, whereas we had no arms. And up to today, they are shooting and killing Anglophone Cameroonians. And that's why the children have took it extreme. They said, okay, we want secession, the unification we don't want.
Mr. Frundi, you have been a long-time opposition leader. What do you say to those young people you mentioned who, on this anniversary of the movement, are calling for secession? Are you on their side, or what's the way forward for Cameroon?
I tell the children to go ahead and fight their fights for their rights, because Mr. Biya will not want to dialogue with me for 20-something years. He's not accepted dialogue thing with me. I went to it and told him that the way he's taking things, they'll soon slip out of our hands, and precisely that's what's happening now. And shamefully, unfortunately, people, heads of state that went to the United Nations for their General Assembly are all back in their countries. With people being killed, the country is burning, Sabina has not yet come back.
The Minister of Information, Issa Chiroma, on Sunday threatened to shut any media outlets that are giving what he called voice to the separatists, saying that they must not encourage those who advocate division. What do you say to that?
That's where the quarrels and the misunderstanding now comes in. Because Anglophones believe that if you want to get the information from a person, you have to arrest the person and find out from the person. But when you shoot at gunpoint blank, still, how will you prove that that person was fighting for separation? So these are the brutal acts condemned in very strong terms.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome, sir.
Nijan Frundi is the leader of Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front Party. He was speaking with me from Bamenda, Cameroon. The trial of a Liberian warlord opens today in the U.S. city of Philadelphia. Mohamed Jabate, notoriously known as Jongo Jabba, a rebel commander during Liberia's 14-year civil war, is accused of committing rapes, murders, acts of ritual cannibalism, and enslavement. He fled Liberia in the mid-1990s and has been living in Philadelphia as a businessman and a father of five. U.S. officials say Jabate lied about his past on forms he filed to obtain political asylum and later permanent residency. Jabate admits he fought in the Liberian Civil War, but denies he played any role in committing atrocities. Wilma Okuni is president of the Union of Liberian Associations in the Americas. He says the union supports the trials of all individuals associated with the atrocities of Liberia's civil war as the only way to bring about reconciliation.
The trials of individuals that are associated with the atrocities in our country for the last 14 years of the Civil War is something that the union applauds. We endorse that. We believe that all those who played a significant role during that period to be held accountable for their actions as a way of actually reconciling the country. So we support the action of the United States government and other governments around the world that are pursuing these individuals and bringing them to the point of accountability, because we think that is the only way that we can reconcile the past and move the country forward. Nevertheless, we don't want to prejudge anybody. We believe that all those that are accused are presumed innocent until proven guilty.
You said that a trial such as the one that is taking place today, Monday, in Philadelphia, is important to as a way of reconciliation. But there are those who say in Liberia that it's time to move forward, not to look back at what happened in the past.
That is the paradoxical thing about the Liberian experience. Liberia or Liberians are the few group of people that I know that feel that reconciliation can be done outside the rule of law. We totally reject that premise. We cannot force people to love one another, but we can make people live within the confines of the law. So any reconciliation that rejects accountability, any reconciliation that promotes impunity, James, what do you have with just be short-term peace? Because if individuals are not held accountable for their action, there is the tendency that they can repeat what they did before. So we believe that in order for our society to be reconciled, we have to all conform to the rule of law, as you see here in the United States.
Is it true, Mr. Kony, that some people are planning on demonstrating today, Monday, during the trial?
We heard that from newspaper publications, but there is no evidence of that here that I have seen, or there is no information that I have heard that point to that kind of activity. But at the same time, I will not be surprised if such a demonstration were to occur, because, you know, James, we are a funny kind of people. We tend to do things along friendship lines, along ethnic lines, to the extent that when things are bad, when it is done by someone from our ethnicity, there is still some form of support. That is another strange character of our Liberian experience, that at some point or certain situations, we are unable to disassociate ourselves from the activities of our kinsmen, of our family men, of our friends, and of our relatives.
If you say you believe in the rule of law, there are people who have been calling for the establishment of a war crimes tribunal in Liberia in relation to the war.
I think that would be a terrific idea, where the forum would be created for national accountability. The situation in our country, James, is very shameful. Shameful in the sense that you find individuals in our country, key actors. I'm not just talking about ordinary soldiers. I'm talking about key actors, key participants in the slaughter and the massacre of our people parading the corridors of power in Liberia. And the idea is being promoted that to hold those people accountable is to return the country to war. We reject that.
Mr. Kune, it's so nice to talk with you, and thank you very much for joining us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, James.
Wilmer Kune is president of the Union of Liberian Associations in the Americas. You are speaking with me from the U.S. city of Philadelphia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and today is Monday, the second day of October. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 16 minutes past the hour. The Burundian government says it will not cooperate with the UN Commission of Inquiry that is investigating alleged human rights violations committed in the country since 2015. This comes after the United Nations Human Rights Council approved two resolutions on Burundi. Moses Avyarimana reports from Bujumbura.
The two resolutions were adopted by the United Nations Human Rights Council last week on Burundi. Also last week, African countries approved their own resolution praising Burundi for wishing to engage in dialogue and cooperate with the United Nations. The European Union-led resolution, adopted by the Human Rights Council, extended for 1 year the Commission of Inquiry's mandate to continue its investigations on alleged crimes against humanity committed in Burundi. Martin Nivyabandi, the Burundi Human Rights Minister, said that the country won't cooperate with the Commission of Inquiry.
We rejected that commission, and today also we rejected the commission. They will not cooperate with it. As we said that we will implement the resolution adopted by Human Rights Council and the one submitted by African Union is the one who is matching what we need, our needs. Maybe if the law is that in Burundi, there are violation of human rights, we can see how we can improve it. And the technical cooperation is one way to promote human rights in Burundi.
The United Nations Commission of Inquiry on Burundi had called on the International Criminal Court to open an inquiry on alleged human rights abuses in the country since 2015. The call came after the Commission of Inquiry released a report indicating increased violations of human rights in the country. Laurent Delahose is the French ambassador to Burundi. He said that any solution on the current Burundi crisis must be based on the return of the rule of law.
Well, we certainly call on the government to enter into full cooperation with the Commission. The government itself has said that has criticized the Commission in a way with only hearing one side of the story on human rights violation. But that is because the government itself refused to work with it.
Meanwhile, hundreds of Burundians marched on Saturday to protest the European Union-led resolution to extend the Commission of Inquiry's mandate. But Burundi's Human Rights Minister, Martin Nivyabandi, said that the country's justice system can still investigate on the alleged crimes.
In different countries, human rights are violated, but we have to address the challenges we're facing as a Burundian. No foreigners will come and push us to respect human rights. That's why we supported, we endorsed the resolution adopted by, submitted by African Union.
Burundi is set to officially pull out from the International Criminal Court later this month, saying that the court is biased because it targets only African leaders. Burundi will be the first African country to withdraw from the court since it was established in 1998. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Angola's new president, João Lourenço, has announced his cabinet. Veteran journalist Mario Alpavio says the 31-member cabinet includes some important names and 12 women.
In fact, the new president, João Lourenço, has appointed 31 ministers. Three of them are state ministers, which means there are some kind of super ministers working closely with the president. There is, and this is quite important, a new head of military presidential house, which is General Pedro Neto. He has been a member of parliament and also later governor of one of some provinces. Apart from that, there is a new state minister for economic and social development, which is Mr. Manuel Nunes. He's a man with some credentials on the economic side. So 31 ministers, 12 of them are women, but this appointment of President João Lourenço has been condemned by the main opposition parties because there is no real change on the politics of President João Lourenço.
Is this an improvement compared to the government of the former President dos Santos? And also, are there some opposition members in this new government?
Yes. So this government, it's a bit teeny, as Mr. Lourenço promised, but not that much. This is one point that has been criticized not only by opposition political parties, but also from civil society organizations. A number of members of the previous government are still there. There are a couple of new faces, more than the inner circle of the president, rather than in the new cabinet.
I read that the leader of UNITA, Isaias Samakuva, has stepped down. Did he really step down?
Yes. He made an announcement, Mr. Isaias Samakuva, in the last meeting of the political commissions. It's something like a political bureau of UNITA parties last week. Reaffirmed that announcement that he really stepped down. So he will no longer be the UNITA's leader. This means that the leadership of UNITA must call for some kind of an extraordinary congress to, in a way, elect the new president.
That's veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpaivai speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. Cardiovascular disease is a growing health concern in Kenya and around Africa. When someone goes into cardiac arrest, minutes matter. In Nairobi, 100 motorcycle taxi drivers are being trained to provide CPR and emergency resuscitation using automatic electronic defibrillators. It's part of an ongoing campaign to raise awareness about heart health in Kenya. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi.
22-year-old Marvin Makodzi goes about cleaning his boda boda. For the last 6 years, he has been a boda boda driver to provide for his family. Makodzi is one of 100 boda boda riders here in Kawangware who will pedal a stationary bike for 10 minutes as part of a challenge by Philips dubbed Back to Rhythm. Philips will donate one automated external defibrillator, AED, which costs about $5,000 for every 152 kilometers biked during the event. Back to Rhythm aims at creating public awareness around cardiac health in Kenya.
This is a great initiative, and in the event that I'm in an accident with a customer, it will come in handy. The community at large will benefit too.
The campaign is open to the public and has garnered interest both far and wide. Musa Lukaore, an entrepreneur, hopes that his participation will benefit others.
I feel the need to be part of this campaign, even if I don't personally benefit. Someone else will, because everybody has a heart.
Sudden cardiac arrest, or SCA, occurs when the heart is starved of oxygen. Officials from the Kenya Red Cross took the boda boda riders through a training session on how to handle the AEDs and emergency resuscitation. Jasper Westerink from Philips says that 10 AEDs will be given to the Kenya Red Cross to put up in public places. Westerink notes that the AEDs could increase the chances of survival for someone in cardiac arrest.
You can treat somebody on the spot. It's actually a very cost-efficient way to treat a person, and it increases the chances of survival many-folded.
Abbas Galay from the Kenya Red Cross spoke to VOA on the rising cases of cardiac diseases, and he fixed the blame on unhealthy lifestyles.
The number of people with cardiac arrest and heart patients is on the increase, not only in Kenya but in the continent, because of lifestyles and unhealthy lifestyles. So awareness is one, but having the equipment ready to respond should it be needed is why we're here today.
According to the Kenya Cardiac Society, the percentage of fatalities as a result of cardiac diseases in the country stands at 12%. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi, Kenya.
25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin with the 2017 CAF Champions League semi-final first leg matches played across various venues this past weekend. Al Ahly managed to score a crucial away goal from home but lost 2-1 at Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel in the CAF Champions League semi-final first leg in Sousse on Sunday. The other semi-final first leg ended 0-0 on Friday night between Algeria's USM Alger and Wydad Casablanca of Morocco. The second legs will be played during the weekend of October 20th to the 22nd. In the CAF Confederations Cup, SuperSport United of South Africa scored late to force a 1-1 CAF Confederations Cup draw with Tunisia's Club African in their semi-final first leg match played in Pretoria on Sunday. In the other semi-finals, title holders TP Mazembe of the Democratic Republic of Congo edged 2010 winners FUS Rabat of Morocco 1-0 in Lubumbashi through an early Ben Malango goal. We stay with CAF as the Confederation of African Football has confirmed that three countries, Equatorial Guinea, Ethiopia and Morocco, have submitted bids to host the 2018 African Nations Championship CHAN. CAF Executive Committee is expected to complete the process of selecting a new host country for the tournament scheduled for January 2018 within 15 days. After Kenya, the initial host failed to meet the requirement. Total CHAN is a competition that brings together 16 national teams made up of players selected in their national championships. In women's football, Nigeria's Falconets thrashed their Tanzanian counterparts 6-0 in Dar es Salaam on Sunday to move into the next round of the 2018 FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup qualifiers. Four goals in the first half and two in the second half were enough to earn the Falconets a 9-0 aggregate score. The Falconets will now face Morocco in the next round of the qualifiers. Elsewhere, the Black Princess thumped Algeria 5-0 to reach the second round of the FIFA Under-20 Women's World Cup qualifying round. In cricket news, South Africa fast bowler Moni Mukhele took two wickets for no runs in the first over of Bangladesh's second innings on Sunday. Temba Bavuma is a Proteas batsman.
We've tried to work very hard on our discipline. We've tried to cut out on taking wickets or no balls. I know I'm a culprit of that. We've worked quite hard. The guys do the hard yards at nets.
In golf news, Steven Ferreira of Portugal won his maiden title at the 12th edition of the Uganda Professionals Open at Kintete at the weekend. A 25-year-old becomes the first European to play and win the Ugandan championship.
My form's been a little bit off in South Africa at the moment, so good to get this win, build some confidence up going into the next stretch of the tournaments in South Africa. And once again, thanks to Uganda. It's quite a beautiful place. Golf course is stunning.
The Portuguese urged Kenya's strongman Dismas Indiza by three strokes to lift his third title in 2017. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington. And do have a good Monday morning.
And thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. The leader of Cameroon's main opposition Social Democratic Front Party is accusing government security forces of indiscriminately shooting at and killing unarmed protesters in the country's English-speaking regions on Sunday. And that's it for this Monday, October 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns. I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping you have a productive week.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.